This is Hold Me Like We're Dying, written by Shasta Firecracker and read by Flower Parish. This is a Star Wars Rebels fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Callus/Zeb. This is part 3 of the Cold Love series. Summary: An AU retake of the Honorable Ones. Longtime mercenary duo Callus and Zeb assist the Ghost Crew with a mission that goes wrong, leaving the two stranded on a freezing moon with a dire injury to deal with and predators prowling the darkness. In the course of escaping, Callus explains how he came to leave the Empire, and Zeb finally says how he feels, which Cal might finally be ready to hear.
And if I cry, you want just some other shit, just some other shit, just some other things that I've been dealing with. I die in your arms, bury me while playing this, bury me saying you were all I ever needed, and hold me like we're dying.
Zeb likes the crew of the Ghost a lot, but that doesn't change the fact that they are cursed. Every job he and Cal have ever run in tandem with the Spectre Cell has gone awry in some crazy way. The only difference this time is that it seems like the Spectre's Ash the Blessed ability to squeak out of danger isn't going to extend to Zeb and Cal like it's always done before.
Captain One, Ghost is ready to get the hell out of here. Waiting on you. Do you copy?
Copy, Spectre Two. Zeb pants into his comlink, ducking a blaster bolt and laying cover fire for Callus to dart past him in the corridor. Get your crew out. We're taking an alternate exit.
Zeb.
Just go, Zeb yells, and cuts the link to Hera Syndulla, the best pilot he's ever met, and definitely who he'd like to be flying him out of danger right now. Instead, he's got a bank of escape pods and no time to think. Callus smacks the controls for the first one in the lineup and turns to lay cover fire so Zeb can clamber inside. Zeb flips toggles like mad, priming the single-use propulsors. Cal, he bellows. In. He punches the launch control, and Callus barely hops through the hatch in time, accompanied by a blaster bolt that sizzles past his neck, leaving a proximity burn, and slags directly into the console, lighting up sparks everywhere and blacking out multiple readouts. Zeb yells profanities and immediately slaps the sparks out to prevent a fire from catching, but he can already tell the pod is criffed in some fundamental way. It lurches so hard that Callus is thrown into the wall, and Zeb barely stays upright. Callus staggers to the console. Lost nav and stern propulsor, he yells. It was programmed for planetfall, but it's... Zeb can already tell they're off course from Geonosis proper, but that's about all he can tell as they're both flung around again, losing contact with the console and slamming into the walls and ceiling as if the artificial gravity isn't active at all. And in the chaos and sirens and red flashing lights, he just has time to think, this is it, and don't Griffin puke, don't go out like that, and... Cal, Cal, Cal. The quality of light out the viewport changes from vacuum to atmosphere, screeching past white hot, and then there's a huge crunch, and Zeb blacks out. He wakes to Callus screaming. Zeb can't have been out long, maybe a minute at most. It takes a horrible, red-hued, flashing moment to orient himself, but once he figures out which way is down, he realizes that the escape pod is no longer moving and... he isn't dead. And from the sound of it, neither is Cal. Hey, Zeb croaks, pushing himself up on shaky arms. Callus. Cal lets out another awful noise, muffled this time as he grits his teeth and tries to move. Don't move. Stop. Let me see. Zeb's head swims, but he makes it upright enough to get a good look, which makes nausea roll through him again, because human legs definitely don't bend like that. Carabast, he hisses. Still disoriented and aching like, well, like a planet's just slammed into him, Zeb takes stock of their situation. The pod is beyond repair, crushed and smoking at the nose end. It's tipped into the ground at a crazed angle, leaving nowhere flat to lie or stand, so Callus's broken leg is actively being compressed by the angle he's fallen into. Zeb rips open the emergency storage compartments and finds them minimally stocked, Not too surprising for a decommissioned orbital station. They're lucky there are any supplies at all. Okay, Zeb pants, already regretting what he's about to do. You're not gonna like this. He yanks a security strap off the side of the storage locker, winds it around his hand, and leans down to shove the bundled plastifiber webbing in Callus's mouth. Cal looks up at him with watery-eyed alarm, and Zeb can tell that the sound in the back of his throat wants to be a strident no. Come on, Zeb says, and wraps his arm around Cal's chest, claws into the steep angle of the pod's floor, and heaves them both towards the hatch. Callus shrieks bloody murder. Sorry, Zeb grits, knocking the hatch open and hauling them both out into abrupt, shocking cold. Sorry, mate, gotcha, come on, gotta get the pressure off that. He lays a rapidly panting Callus out on a churned-up snowbank and glances around. They're inside what appears to be an iced-over cave, watery sunlight and fresh flakes of thick, wet snow falling down through a hole punched into the landscape by their crashing pod. The cave is rocky, barren, full of spindly ice structures, and not much else. Carabast, Zeb mutters again, guts twisting. Of all the places to crash, if they don't figure out something fast, they'll be dead of exposure in hours. At least they have air. At least they're not dead already. Driven by adrenaline and survival instinct, Zeb hauls himself back into the escape pod and starts tossing out everything that could possibly be of use. It's not great. The emergency heating unit has a dent in it and a low battery gauge. The compartment that should have held the survival rations is empty. The transponder beacon is in pieces. The repair kit is still there, though, and after a hard look at the transponder, Zeb thinks he might be able to fix it. It would be a long shot, but the crew of the Ghost have a reputation for being good to their allies. They might make a pass or two of the system to search for the escape pod. There just needs to be an active signal for them to pick up. Zeb grabs their two bow rifles last, slings his own over his back, and holds Cal's as he climbs out of the pod for the last time. Outside, Callus has managed to get up on one elbow, breathing hard, and is poking at the camp heater's controls. You got it? Zeb asks, dropping down next to him. Couple hours' charge at most, Callus manages, his voice breathy and his teeth already starting to chatter. Could you rig the pod's fuel line? Busted, Zeb says shortly, and Callus huffs. So we're going to die, Callus chatters, in about 10 hours, a day at the outside. Nah, Zeb says, dropping Cal's bow rifle next to him and showing him the transponder. I'll get this going, we'll be set. To call who? Callus asks. His face is far paler than usual. The Empire's still in the system, and that's an Imperial unit, keyed to their frequencies. Jailbreaking it's no problem, you know that. Zeb crouches next to Callus. Ghosts'll come looking, you know they don't leave people behind. We're not their people, Callus insists. Hey. Zeb puts the transponder down and reaches out to touch Callus's face. The man flinches. Zeb frowns. Get your head together, Cal. Why you giving up so fast? We can make it. Always have. Callus tries to muster a glare at him. Then he just closes his eyes, panting hard still. Carabast, Zeb sighs. He picks up the med kit, but there aren't any pain tabs left in it. Just Bacta-free topical numbing cream and a lot of bandages. Resisting the nausea it triggers, Zeb makes himself look at Callus's leg again, assessing. Gonna need to set that, he says. Callus makes a noise that Zeb's sure he will deny was a whimper. Okay, look. Zeb shuffles down Cal's body to his feet. Quicker I do it, quicker it's done. You want to count? No, I don't want to count, Garazeb. Callus snarls. I'm not a Zeb swallows back the bile that rises in his throat at the feel of bone crunch under his hands. Callus's leg is at least straight again. He looks around for anything sturdy he can line up against the limb, then freezes as another sound echoes distantly through the icy cavern. It's a shriek, seemingly in response to Callus's shout, but it sounds like the being making it is bigger. Great, Zeb mutters. We're going to die, Callus says flatly. Zeb growls at him. You're so fast to give up hope. I'm just realistic. Gimme that. Zeb takes Cal's bow rifle and sets it to staff mode. It'll be awkward, but it'll have to do. What? I might need that, Kallus says, glancing with alarm at the distant shadows of the cave. You need to stop shrieking like a dust siren, Zeb says, lining up the rifle and unrolling some bandages. It takes him a moment to wrap the weapon securely to Cal's leg, and while he does it, Cal makes some interestingly contorted faces, but he does manage to keep himself down to only a few pained groans. Anyway, you got your sidearm. Zeb looks pointedly at the blaster still strapped neatly against Cal's opposite thigh. Not? Kallus pauses, panting. Not as high caliber. Not a strong deterrent. Against being eaten. I'll eat you, Zeb grouses, smacking Kallus's unbroken shin and going back to the transponder. Cal actually manages a brief, laugh-like huff. Not in these temperatures, you won't, he says. Some of the tension in Zeb's shoulders lets go. If Kallus can still be amused by Zeb's bad jokes, he'll be okay. At least for the moment. Zeb pokes at the transponder. After a long few minutes of silence, Kallus says, It's getting dark. Going to get colder soon. As long as I've got enough light to see what I'm doing with this, Zeb grumbles. Need me to do it? No, Zeb grunts. Need you to hush up so I can... In the distance, another animal cry echoes through the tunnels, and shortly after, another responding. After a moment, all Kallus says is, Hurry. Zeb silently agrees. The first time it happened, Zeb couldn't say what possessed him to do it. He'd heard Kallus have hundreds of nightmares over their time together. He'd gone through all sorts of stages of feelings about it, annoyance at being woken up frequently, then getting so used to it that he slept through most of them, then becoming so much more attuned to Kallus as a friend that he started waking up at the sound of Cal's distress again, but only feeling sorry for him. He'd adopted a habit of getting up to use the fresher every time he woke up to Kallus's pained noises. The routine sounds of the waste unit cycling and the wall-mounted hand sonic buzzing would invariably make Kallus wake up just enough to dispel whatever tormented him in his dreams. More often than not, Zeb didn't even need the fresher. He just hit the machine's buttons and went back to his cot. Then, Coruscant. Then a week turned into two, and a month, and more, without returning to the subject of intimacy. Kallus had nightmares. Zeb pushed buttons in the fresher. Until, for no primary reason that Zeb could put a finger on, that just wasn't enough anymore. Zeb woke to the sounds of Cal's pain. Kallus had never been loud. He made the same noises in his sleep every time. Some combination of grinding teeth and illegible murmurs broken up by short, sucked-in breaths and small moans. He would twitch as though he were trying to block a blow. Sometimes Zeb would lie there and watch him in the dark before getting up. Zeb watched him that time. Maybe he was feeling particularly maudlin. Maybe he was just lonely, a feeling he'd become deeply acquainted with over the years since Lassan. Sometimes being around Kallus helped the loneliness, but sometimes the arm's lengths at which they held each other just made it profoundly worse. Some part of Zeb, the old-fashioned idealist, had maybe thought that sex would bring Cal closer. But sex, Zeb knew perfectly well, was not necessarily intimacy. And Alexander Kallus was more afraid of intimacy than anyone Zeb had ever known. Kallus rolled in his sleep, arm twitching outward as though to ineptly punch an invisible assailant. He let out a quiet grunt and a slur of words, of which Zeb could only make out a single, strained, stop. Zeb got up from his cot. He stood in the center of the tiny ship, between the dark doorway of the refresher and the cot opposite him. He didn't step over to the fresher. He braced himself, expecting Kallus to wake up swinging. Zeb had learned from a very young age not to wake old warriors unexpectedly. His grandfather had once gone off-world with a detachment sent to aid the Wookiees during a conflict, After he'd come back, he'd frequently muttered, "Too many legs," in his sleep, and would come awake hollering and reaching for a rifle. So Zeb expected no less from Callis, who was far angrier and more broken than Zeb's grandfather had ever been. Zeb didn't expect for the lightest of touches to cause Callis to freeze utterly still, eyes flying wide open in the dark. Callis stared at Zeb, every muscle locked tight, barely breathing. "It's me," Zeb said, quiet and uncertain. Callis didn't respond. "Having a nightmare," Zeb said lamely, as if Callis didn't know. The question finally seemed to enter Callis's eyes. "What are you doing?" And Zeb thought about that cursed tunnel in the bowels of Coruscant, and the panic and pleading in Callis's, "What are you doing?" down there, and Zeb realized, finally, that unless he pushed a little, nothing was ever going to change between them. He'd only ever pushed once, and wondered ever since if he'd been wrong and cruel to do so. But the look on Callis's face in the darkness of the powered-down ship, if anyone in the galaxy needed pushing, it was this man. "Budge up," Zeb said with renewed self-assurance, shoving Callis's shoulder. Callis whispered a nearly silent, "What?" Zeb made some space for himself. Not enough, really, but the cots were on the floor, so he would just have to be hanging half off onto the hard metal. He laid down and rolled Callis firmly back into his arms once he was settled, getting a defensive grunt from the human and a truly disbelieving stare. "Go to sleep," Zeb told Callis. Callis whispered, "Why, what?" "Go," Zeb repeated, letting a bit of growl enter his voice. "Back to sleep." Zeb never did look at the chrono that night. He didn't know how long Callis laid there, wide awake and silent in his arms. He knew that he must have fallen asleep first, and that when he woke hours later, he was alone and Callis was sitting in the pilot's seat, running nav calculations. But there had still been a little lingering warmth in the spot next to Zeb. "Got it," Zeb says triumphantly, pushing down his unease. Fixing the transponder has taken much too long. Their window of hope that the ghost will try to find them is rapidly shrinking. Zeb tugs the antenna up to full extension and twiddles the controls. "Full frequency spectrum. Anyone can pick it up." "Empire included," Callis chatters. He's been remarkably still for the last hour, only shuddering every now and then, but Zeb's been making sure the most functional side of the campheater is turned in Callis's direction. Zeb's got fur. He'll be fine. "If imps pop up, we'll smack them back down like we always do," Zeb says, with far more assurance than he feels. Cal just sighs. "Zeb." "Nah," says Zeb. "We're not having this conversation. Optimism, mate." "Your endless bounty of it never ceases to baffle me," Callis says. The corner of his mouth tries to twitch upward, though. He has been more easily accepting of Zeb's optimism lately, a little softer in his tone, even when he argues for the side of doom and gloom, and Zeb is pretty sure it's more that the routine of their banter is a comfort than that Callis truly believes the absolute worst at all times. Zeb sometimes surprises himself with his own level of optimism, but he's stubborn and contrarian, and so Cal's insistence on always assuming the worst has pushed Zeb to the opposite end of the spectrum for so long that now it comes naturally. And it's better, assuming that things will turn out all right, no matter what Cal says. It feels better. Zeb sleeps better, trying to see the good around him instead of the bad. Then the camp heater lets out a pathetic, failing buzz and flickers several times before clicking off. "Ah," Zeb says. "Right," says Cal, hugging himself tighter. "Optimism." "Don't mock me," Zeb tells him. He sets aside the transponder and stands up, creaking his half-frozen bones. He's been too still, working on the transponder. His feet shoot pain up his legs as he wriggles them, forcing circulation to his toes. He shivers and shakes himself to get his blood moving, looking around the cavern and unslinging his bow rifle out of habit. He starts roaming away. Where are you going? Callus asks. It comes out whiny. Establishing a perimeter, Zeb says. He wanders towards where he thinks the animal cries came from before to see what the cave exit looks like. We ought to be sharing body heat, Callus calls petulantly. Yeah, yeah, keep your shirt on, Zeb calls back. And then a small glow of light around a corner catches his eye. He moves towards an ice formation that has a glowing crater in its center, a thin curl of steam rising from within. He reaches inside and nearly flinches as his fingers touch warmth. Zeb lifts out a fist-sized rock and gives it a once-over, curious. Maybe a meteorite, maybe a piece of the surrounding landscape broken off and superheated by their own crash. Either way, it's warm. He heads back to Cal. What's that? Zeb tosses Cal the rock. Dunno, but it throws heat. There you go, get warm. Probably radioactive, Callus chatters, but he catches the rock and examines it before wrapping his hands tight around it and tucking it against his chest. Out in the distant depths of the cavern, a chuffing roar echoes. They've heard a few of these in the last hour, but this one seems closer. Zeb lifts his rifle. You really think we'll survive whatever that is in there? Callus asks through his shivers. And the temperature's dropping. We don't know how long this thing will last. He squeezes the rock. Cal, Zeb sighs. I know what you're doing, so stop. What? Trying to get me to admit defeat, Zeb says. Another roar, way off in the dark. Zeb looks down at Callus, only to find the man looking up at him, his expression an odd combination of hurt and longing. Cal opens his mouth a couple of times, then says, No, I mean it. You think we'll make it? Zeb's heart pangs. He crouches next to Cal. Hey, he says. Yeah, I... He pauses, rubs the back of his neck with one hand. Well, I don't know, he says finally. But if I don't think it's possible, then it definitely won't be. So I gotta at least think there's a chance. You get me? Callus looks him in the eyes for a long moment. Finally, he nods. Then I'll choose to believe you, he says quietly. For now. Zeb reaches out and runs a hand over Cal's hair. Good. He cups the side of Cal's face before letting his hand drop. Too bad you shaved yesterday, he says, trying to lift the mood a bit. You'd be happier for the scruff now. Callus huffs at him. Are you going to conserve body heat with me or not, Garazeb? Zeb chuckles. Yeah, yeah, just let me... Another creature roar echoes, much closer now, shivering some flakes of ice from the ceiling. Carabast. Zeb swings his rifle out into ready position, rounding on the cave. Roar, quake, ice chunks fall. Callus unholsters his sidearm just in time for their first glimpse of the creature whose cavern they've gatecrashed. Ah, he says. Criff. Zeb? Zeb primes his rifle, faces down the giant, axe-faced lizard beast currently roaring at the smell of warm prey, and knows, above all else, that Callus will have his back. His heart rate soars. He bares his teeth in a grin. They won't die today. At least, not yet. The second time it happened was after the fourth time they had sex. Twice, they'd suffered the indignity of immediate cleanup, deconstructing whichever cot had gotten damp, running it through the tiny sanitary unit, Zeb sitting awkwardly next to the box while it whirred, and while Cal ran away to poke at the navigation console, even if the computer didn't need any input. Then there'd been a strenuous mission, a tight timeline, a skin-of-their-teeth escape, and they'd fallen into the post-mission frenzy that was starting to become inevitable, all hands and sweat and groaned curses. And then, after, breathing hard, jelly-jointed, minds still hazy, Callus had held on to Zeb's arm. And even after they'd cooled down, were breathing normally, felt a little more sane, Cal kept holding on to Zeb's arm. And Zeb had said, should probably clean up. And Callus had pushed his face against Zeb's shoulder so that Zeb could barely hear him murmur, Stay. So Zeb stayed. They'd slept like that, Zeb eventually reaching over to pull Cal close, arm around his bare waist. And as far as Zeb could tell, the galaxy didn't end because of a few stains, and Callus didn't dream. You idiot, why'd you stand up? You needed the, backup. Zeb sighs as he double-checks the makeshift splint against Cal's leg. We gotta get out of the cave. That thing'll be back, probably with friends. Callus groans, but nods. The transponder signal will reach further outside the ice anyway. He pushes against the icy ground. Hey, nah, just got you put back together again, Zeb snaps. Let me figure out the way out before you break yourself more. How do you plan? Can't be that hard, Zeb says, and stabs his bow rifle into the ice next to Callus. Got these. He waggles his claws. The inward curvature of the ice walls proves him wrong, unfortunately, but at least Cal has the decency not to laugh at Zeb falling on his ass. Much. You'll hurt yourself, Cal calls when Zeb goes to try again. We definitely won't get out of here with two broken legs. Zeb turns to him with a huff of frustration. Any better ideas, big brain? Don't climb the walls, climb the pillars, Callus says, pointing at the ice structures that are, granted, much closer to the giant hole in the ceiling. You kidding? Those will never hold our weights, Zeb says in disbelief. I think they're sturdier than they look, Callus says. At least this one here, and that one, they're load-bearing, for the ice overhead. They have stone cores under the ice, see? Zeb takes a closer look, grumbling, and yet again has to swallow the annoying fact that Cal is right. He looks over the two pillars Callus had pointed to, and picks the one he trusts fractionally more. Out in the caverns, the axe lizards shriek again, closer, and multiple of them. Zeb looks between the pillar, the bleak night sky beyond, the dark cavern tunnels, and Callus shivering on the icy stone ground. All right, he says, cracking his knuckles. One go at this. Hop on and hope this works. As Callus struggles upright against the escape pod, transponder clipped to his belt, he says, usually I let you have hope enough for both of us. Give it a shot. Might need more hope on our side this time. Callus loops his arms around Zeb's neck, chokes back a pained cry as he hoists himself up, and says, for you, I'll try. Best I can ask for, Zeb rumbles, heart pounding. The lizards are closing in, footsteps rumbling the ground. Callus's grip is tight, his weight awkward but bearable. Zeb takes a running jump to the pillar and starts to climb. It kept happening. Zeb tended to be the one to initiate sex, but Callus tended to be the one who stayed after and held Zeb in place, and if that was the excuse he needed, then so be it. Zeb couldn't deny him, but also couldn't figure out how to say that Callus could have the holding without the excuse, if he wanted. That he could come to Zeb any time, could occupy the space under Zeb's chin and pressed up against his heart without asking, clothed or not, in the dark or not, in front of the rest of the galaxy or hidden alone, Zeb didn't care. Zeb didn't know how to broach the subject that he was starting to sleep badly without Callus to hold on to. Zeb didn't know how to tell Callus that he cared about him, so much more than he'd ever said out loud, that it was starting to become painful all crammed up inside Zeb's chest and stomach. So, when Callus stood up from the nav console after one grueling intel run, bruise-eyed with lack of sleep, and Zeb couldn't stand the self-cannibalizing gnawing in his gut any longer, Zeb took hold of Cal's arm and dragged him to bed. And when Callus hoarsely tried to apologize that he was too tired for sex, Zeb had just turned the ship's lights off and dragged Cal down onto the cot with him, still dressed. And when, after a long, still moment, Callus had muttered that he hadn't even cleaned his teeth yet, Zeb had kissed him. They'd kissed before, of course, bruising and hurried, panting and hot, sharp breaths of survival. Wanton, sometimes, and sensuous others, always with intent, always in some momentary competition, hearts pounding. This time, Zeb brushed his hand over Cal's cheek in the dark, both of them exhausted, and Zeb kissed slow and soft, like he hoped Callus could hear his thoughts. Like he hoped the kiss alone could be enough, after all they'd been through, to make Callus understand the feathered creature that kept growing and squirming and crying out in Zeb's chest. The kiss couldn't communicate all that. Zeb knew it couldn't. But Callus kissed back. And it was unspeakably good, and it made Zeb's chest go quiet and light in a way he hadn't felt for years. After that, they'd combined their cots into one pallet and never slept alone again. Zeb almost misses the action of the caverns down below. At least it had kept them warm. They've tucked themselves against the lee of a rocky overhang, but the wind sometimes changes angles and catches them with fresh slashes of snow. The single small meteorite throws enough light that Zeb can see frost forming in Cal's eyelashes. The human's lips are slowly turning the color of Zeb's lips. Zeb shuffles a little, as if he could get them any closer together. He can't. Zeb is sitting behind Callus, knees drawn up against the human's sides, arms wrapped around Cal's chest, blocking in as much of the heat of the meteorite as they can possibly retain. Cal's face is bowed to the light, his hands ungloved. Why ungloved this time of all times, when Cal favors gloves so often? Tucked up by his chest to hold the hot little stone close to his core. Limbs can be lost, he'd said, without doing permanent harm. Organs matter more. Personally, Zeb thinks that limbs matter plenty, and he's getting more worried about Cal's leg by the minute. It's stretched out, covered by snow now, unable to be bent up close to the heat source. Zeb doesn't like that Cal hasn't been able to feel his leg for a couple of hours. Cal has assured him that the numbness is preferable to the pain. It's been how long? 8 hours, maybe, since the crash. There's nothing they can do anymore but wait. The transponder's signal is as strong as it'll get. The meteorite might extend their survival by a few hours, but without true shelter, water, and medical care, they're going to die, sooner or later. Zeb wants to say so many things. He isn't sure how. He hugs Callus close instead, and tucks his face against the side of Cal's face, and is sorry it's come to this. Zeb, Cal sighs. Just thinking, Zeb says, muffled. Be careful, that's dangerous, Cal says, and Zeb can hear the faintest smile in his voice. Hush it, you. Cal huffs. He moves his hands to Zeb's arms, burying fingertips in cold fur. After a long moment, he says, I'm sorry I pushed so hard to join the ghost for this mission. I should have seen the potential for a trap, but I was blinded by my own interests. Zeb nuzzles. His nose hurts from the cold, and Cal's neck isn't exactly warm, but it blocks the wind. Yeah, he asks. Something special to you about a lot of dead bugs? Yes, Callus murmurs. Actually, yes. They sit in silence. Zeb says, might be running out of your last chance to talk about it, if there's something weighing on you. Dunno if your people ever went in for something like confession, but sometimes on Lassan, the old-timers, they thought telling the Ashley your regrets was the only way to die at peace. No, Callus says. No beliefs like that. And I never intended to tell anyone. But you're not anyone, are you? He trails off. I'm yours, Zeb tells him, eyes closed. If they weren't going to die, he might not have said it, but now it's been said, and it wasn't even that hard to get the words out. And you're mine. It's a long moment before Callus says, hoarsely, didn't take you for a romantic. You haven't been paying attention then, Zeb says, and kisses Cal's neck. Cal sucks in a breath. Zeb can feel from the way his breathing has changed that his chest is tight with emotion. There's nothing Zeb can do but keep holding him. After a while, Callus starts speaking, raspy and low. After Lisan, I had several career choices. I was highly desirable, scouted by multiple departments. Internal investigation, diplomatic interference, routing rebel sympathizers in all sorts of different sectors. Lothal was especially appealing. I probably would have gone to Lothal. Realistically, I should have gone there, but Lisan sat poorly with me. And there was another project, a similar project, being spoken of regarding Geonosis. I pushed for placement there. I was still naive enough to think, that the way Lisan was handled was the fault of a few bad actors in positions of unearned authority. I thought, if I tried again, if I were promoted enough, I could make it go differently, argue for negotiation over massacre. I don't know anymore. I don't know what I thought I could do. In hindsight, I know I walked directly into the same trap they always use to trim compassion from the higher ranks. I filed certain recommendations based on the information I was granted access to, and the next thing I knew, I was blackbagged from my quarters and taken for questioning about supposed rebel sympathies. I was charged of being a double agent for the Geonosians. I was charged with treason. After I escaped, the first thing I sought out was any information about Geonosis, and all I found was vague reporting about some sort of plague that had ravaged the population. So, when Captain Syndulla mentioned a mission to the old orbital station, I just thought, with a proper infiltration team, I might be able to slice the data stores, see if there was still anything. And I didn't expect zero life signs. That's no disease. That's not even what was done to Lisan. That's not attempted but successful genocide. And the only way the Empire would have kept me, let me live, was if I'd looked at that plan and said, yes, do it, without a single question asked, without hesitation. And what kind of person is that? Every single Imperial officer above a certain rank gets faced with that question, I think. And while I was imprisoned, I was struck with the realization that every single person operating at that level of power passed that test. There have never been isolated bad actors. The Empire is evil. Fundamentally, by design, only evil is allowed to succeed to authority. Zeb squeezes Callus a little. Don't gotta convince me. Callus is shaking in his arms. The cold, Zeb thinks. Callus wouldn't want Zeb to acknowledge any reason other than the cold. I could never have saved them, Callus says, voice thick. Couldn't I? If I'd been more stealthy in my approach, if I'd known beforehand. Could I have saved them, working from the inside? I still don't know. You couldn't have, Zeb says, firm and assured. No matter what you did, the Empire had already decided Geonosis had to go. Callus breathes heavily in silence for a while. Face down in Cal's neck, Zeb can't see if Cal is crying. There are hitches deep in his chest, and Zeb feels each one like a blow. He holds tight. The meteorite isn't warm enough. Abruptly, voice thick and wet, Callus says, they kept me as a training tool. I should have been executed, but I was valuable. They'd sunk so much training into me already. I was useful for the advanced students to practice on. Zeb had thought himself beyond shock at what the Empire was capable of. Vast institutional acts of sterile cruelty are its very building blocks. But he's never considered that the Empire's torturers are all, at one time, baby torturers, students in the art of interrogation, and that in order to learn, they have to practice. Callus says, I didn't know how long I'd been there until I got out. Withholding basic information like time, it's standard, and I knew. I mean, that's why I was useful, because I knew the methods, so they had to be more clever to get to me, but it went both ways, so I picked my target, built a rapport with him, until he helped me escape. I thought I was being merciful when I killed him. They'd have just put him in my place after I was gone, a bolt to the back of the head. He didn't even know it was coming. Was that mercy? I don't know anymore. I don't know. And now, Cal is hiccuping out words like he's drowning, and Zeb can't pretend he doesn't know Cal is sobbing, but there's nothing Zeb can do. They're going to die soon, too cold to feel pain, and Zeb hasn't even had the spine to say, "I love you." Cal makes a faint keening sound, rejecting it. "Cal," Zeb says, wiping away his own tears against Cal's shoulder. "Do you hear me?" Cal shakes his head, jerking in wet breaths. "You know what's right," Zeb says, voice thick. "You do. The Ashla's got a home in your heart. Maybe you don't always get everything right, but you're trying harder than anyone else I've ever known. That matters." "Zeb, it Criffin matters, Cal," Zeb sniffs. "More than I know how to say. I don't know how I couldn't love ya. You gave me the chance to be a person again." "I took it away in the first place. If not you, the next guy." Zeb squeezes Cal maybe a little too tight, but he can't care. "Wasn't that the big revelation, huh? That the gears just turn, and if you fiddle with them, they crush you to paste and replace you with the guy who won't stand up for the right thing. That brood cell was waiting for me from the minute the Empire decided it needed Lassan's quarries and lumberyards. Nothing to do with you." Callus makes an angry, helpless sound. He's holding on to Zeb's forearm too tight. "And then you came, and you made me so Criffin mad I remembered how to feel anything. I remembered how to care because of you. I'd have died without you, Cal, and you know it. All these things you think are proof you failed, or that you're evil or something, they're just proof you're trying to be decent. Getting it wrong sometimes, and getting punished for no reason sometimes, but Criffin trying, and I love you for that." For a long while after that, neither of them speak. Cal gets his breathing under control eventually. Zeb's chest feels messy and awful, but he's said at least some of the things he needed to say. He wishes that saying them made him more at peace with the idea of death, but instead, voicing his feelings has made him desperately sad that this is the only chance he'll get. He just wants more time. At length, so quiet Zeb almost doesn't hear it over the wind, Callus says, "I'm so tired, Garazeb." And even though he knows it's a bad idea, and his mouth twists with grief, Zeb says, "Get some rest. I've got you." "I know you do," Callus says, and then, "Thank you." Zeb chokes out, "Hush." And then he leaves his face in the crook of Cal's shoulder, blames the quaking in his limbs on the cold, and tries not to cry while Cal drifts into stillness. Zeb wakes to the sound of rumbling, a high whine, a flash of light, a bassy thud that shakes the ground. Voices. Voices? Urgency seizes Zeb's lungs. He pries his eyes open and notices there's color to the sky. Night has passed, and the snow's stopped. He unbends his frozen knuckles and shakily unwraps one arm from Cal's body to reach over his shoulder for his bow rifle. If it's the Empire, if those are the voices of troopers, then Zeb will just have to hold them off as best he can, try to steal their shuttle. If he can't, well, he isn't letting Callus get taken. Or himself. "Cal," Zeb croaks, shaking him. He doesn't even let himself consider the possibility that Cal's already gone. He extends his claws and pokes Callus's chest with them. Cal makes a faint, groggy noise. "Wake up," Zeb hisses. "Someone's found us." "Whew. Gotta go see," Zeb says, levering himself away from Callus and pushing to his feet. His whole body screams with the ache and he stumbles a bit. Come on, Cal." But Zeb looks down from the blurry horizon to see that Callus is already slumping over without Zeb to hold him up. "Carabast," Zeb hisses. "Just hold on." Zeb takes a few shaky steps out from around the lee of their shelter. The rising sun makes it hard to tell, but there, a flash of color, a straight line of pure electric blue. Lightsaber. "Here," Zeb tries to call out. His throat is raw. He swallows and tries again, managing a ragged, "Here, over here." The crew of the Rebel fighter Ghost emerge from the misty dawn like saviors from a tale. Zeb can barely get full sentences out, but he manages to tell them Callus is dying. His eyes have gone blurry all over again. It's hard to believe any of this is real. "We've got him, big guy," says the little Mandalorian artist. Zeb's always liked her. "Look, Kanan and Rex can carry him back. What about you? You hurt?" "Dunno," Zeb says, except that everything hurts. "Lean on me," says the Mando girl, and Zeb wouldn't believe she could hold him up, except that she does. Her armor is warm. The rebels hurry Zeb and Callus into the warmth of their ship with kind words and efficiency. Captain Syndulla runs ahead of the rest. By the time the Jedi and the old clone warrior are lying Callus down in one of the bunks, the ship's already shuddering its way up out of the atmosphere. "Man, you guys sure are lucky Hera wanted to do another pass," says the younger Jedi. "Ezra," Zeb remembers hazily. "Ezra, not now," says his teacher, Kanan. "Go make some tea." "Fine," Ezra says, and swans away. Zeb crouches next to the bunk where Callus is blinking groggily and starting to tremble. "Hey," Zeb tells him, and picks up one of his hands. The other is still clenched tight around the hot little meteorite. "We made it. Always do, don't we?" Callus's eyes focus on him with some difficulty. Water spills over his lower lashes, streaking over his too pale skin. The tears could just be reflexive as he starts to warm up. "Zeb," Callus croaks. "Gonna get you fixed up," Zeb says. Around him, behind him, the members of the ghost crew are moving. To get medkits, tea, blankets, Zeb isn't sure. It's hard to pay attention to anything. "Don't want to die," Callus whispers. "Course not," Zeb says. "Only I'm allowed to kill you, right?" Callus's face scrunches up. He tightens his hand around Zeb's. "I don't want to die," he repeats, and more tears slide down his face. Angry red patches of returning circulation are starting to bloom in his cheeks. "I don't want to die anymore." "Kel," Zeb whispers back. "Alexander, you're not gonna." "Stay," Cal begs. No one on the Ghost has any problem with the way Zeb climbs into the bunk next to Callus, gathers him into a tight hold, and stays there until the cold has fully melted out of both their bodies. It makes it slightly awkward for Kanan and Rex to get at Cal's leg to bind it properly and inject with Bacta and a painkiller, but all the same, no one tries to make Zeb leave. They'll need to eat and drink soon, and to discuss what to do next with each other and with Captain Syndulla. A small fire's been lit in Zeb's belly, fanned from an ember that's been lingering since the fall of Lassan. He thinks he's ready to take all this rage he has inside him directly to the Empire, to throw in his lot with the Rebellion. He and Cal have done a lot of good in the fight against the slave trade over these past few years, but no amount of gangs they neutralize will ever make a dent compared to the amount of sentient flesh the Empire trades in. And now, knowing what the Empire did to Callus personally, that little fire is blazing hotter than ever. Zeb thinks Cal might be up for it now, too. Before, both of them had been too afraid of the specters of their pasts, the things they'd lost, the ways they'd been hurt. Now, they have something to lose again, which means they have something to fight for. But Zeb isn't quite ready to have that talk yet, not as long as Cal is sleeping in his arms and Zeb's head is ringing with, "I don't want to die anymore." Because it sounds an awful lot like, "I love you too." The end.
And if I cry in your arms, just some other shit, just some other shit, just some other things that I've been dealing with. I die in your arms, bury me while playing this, bury me saying you were all I ever needed, and hold me like we're dying.